Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, just last week we gave credit to CBS News for some very good reporting talking about the horrific realities in many different ways as a result of the Obamacare rollout. But another piece of solid journalism from Lara Logan last night on 60 Minutes detailing what happened in Benghazi. She talked to a number of security personnel, Greg Hicks, who testified before Congress, the former deputy to Ambassador Chris Stevens was in the report as well, and a lot of things in here that shed some new light and do not paint a good picture for the administration. First of all, Logan flat out rejecting the administration's assertion for days and days after the attacks that there was no evidence that this was a planned terrorist attack.
We do not have any indication at this point of premeditation or pre-planned attacks. But it is
contrary to the White House's public statements, which were still being made a full week later. It's now well established that the Americans were attacked by al-Qaeda in a well-planned assault.
And another key piece here, Jim, is that we should have seen it coming. Lara Logan also talked with a former Green Beret commander, one of the top security officials in Libya, about how al-Qaeda had telegraphed its planned terrorist attacks, and we were next on the list.
Al-Qaeda, using a familiar tactic, had stated their intent in an online posting, saying they would attack the Red Cross, the British, and then the Americans in Benghazi.
And you watched as they attacked the Red Cross and the British mission, and the only ones left
were us. They made good on two out of the three promises. It was a matter of time till they captured the third one.
And so, Jim, some are saying that CBS deserves criticism because Obama and Hillary Clinton were never mentioned here. That is true. However, the implications of all this are still pretty clear.
Yeah, this is a 15-minute report that uncovers a lot of new information, so I'm not going to be that persnickety about whether it points the finger high enough on the administration. That wasn't the aspect of this report, which, by the way, is very natural for a follow-up, and I hope to see Lara Logan go and continue on this story. But two other big scoops, and I think it says something about this report that you and I can both look at it and come away with a total of four really important pieces of information. This is what just had my jaw on the floor. CBS News says they have learned that the U.S. already knew that senior al-Qaeda leader Abu Anas al-Libi was in Libya, tasked by the head of al-Qaeda to establish a clandestine terrorist network inside the country. And if that name sounds familiar, there's two reasons. One is he was caught earlier this year. That's the good news. The bad news is that the reason, you know, al-Libi was on our radar screen was because he was wanted for his role in the embassy bombings in Africa back in the late 90s. So a senior al-Qaeda guy whose job is blowing up U.S. diplomats was in the country, and they didn't seem to take the threat seriously. You cannot paint a picture more clear in its warnings. As Greg Hicks says a few moments later, it raised the stakes, it changed the game. Then the next one, which is as if everything about Benghazi wasn't bad enough, we learn that this man, Soufiane Boukoumou, a former Guantanamo Bay detainee and longtime al-Qaeda operative, was one of the lead planners of the attack in Benghazi. All the Guantanamo Bay critics, you know, really ought to look at that and say, huh, you know, contemplate that. It's worth noting this occurred back in 2007. He was released to the Libyan government back when Gaddafi was in charge. And I guess the idea was that Gaddafi was, you know, willing to keep him in prison. And obviously, when the Gaddafi regime fell apart, this man was no longer in prison. And he was free to continue his work of attacking Americans. Kudos to Lara Logan and CBS News for a really good, detailed, vivid report. Lots of visuals, lots of gripping testimony from these survivors, but also providing new information. And all of that new information points to even more just inexplicable the way the administration handled this before the attack, as the evidence was building that attack was coming. It raised the question of why there was no military effort begun that evening. Here's the thing. Everyone who is upset about Benghazi is not mad that there was not a successful rescue. We are mad that there is no evidence that a rescue ever got moving, that there was never any serious effort to go and help these guys. It also further points out how the attack on the compound, the CIA annex that was there, it came from mortars, that three of them hit one rooftop. The military experts quoted in that site basically are saying, you don't do that without extremely well-trained personnel, with extremely high-level equipment, training, tactics. If mortars are involved, how can that possibly be mistaken for a protest over a video? And it now becomes even more ludicrous, the lame spin that came out of the administration after that. So it is an absolute scandal that this has been allowed to just fall down the memory hole and become a non-entity in our national conversation.
All right, Jim, on to Martini number two now, and on to our continuing frustration with Ken Cuccinelli struggling in his bid to be the next governor of Virginia. One of the weird developments here, of course, is that the Libertarian candidate in this race, Robert Sarvis, is polling right around 10% in a lot of different surveys. And it's especially baffling because Ken Cuccinelli probably embraces more libertarian principles than any other major party candidate you're going to see most of the time. Tim Carney, writing for the Washington Examiner online, says that when it comes to gun control, limited government, that sort of thing, Ken Cuccinelli is about right where the libertarians should want him to be. George Will wrote a column basically endorsing Sarvis last week without listing a single policy position other than the fact that Sarvis likes gay marriage and Cuccinelli supports traditional marriage. So, of all the Republican nominees for the Libertarians to abandon, this seems like the least logical choice.
Two thoughts on that George Will column. One being that George Will has trended Libertarian in recent years, and he's talked about this. I guess it's Libertarianism except for blue jeans, which Will denounced in a 2009 column that kind of seemed like he would, you know, it was just a weird column that George Will really doesn't like people wearing blue jeans, and that seems to really set him off, and that doesn't really seem to mesh well with libertarianism, I would say. But it is kind of odd because this guy Sarvis is running around, you know, 8, 9, 10 percentage points, much higher than a third-party candidate has ever gotten in recent Virginia history. And go back like 40 years or so, I think the most they've ever gotten is in the neighborhood of like 2%. So something very odd is going on here. One possibility here is the supremacy of the abortion issue. Cuccinelli is pro-life. A certain number of libertarians, let's say a majority, but by no means all libertarians, define themselves as being pro-choice. I think there's a fairly compelling libertarian argument that if you believe life begins at some point before birth, whether it's at conception or at some point in the middle there, an abortion represents a unacceptable abridging of the individual rights of that child. So you can be libertarian and pro-life at the same time. You mentioned drug legalization. Cuccinelli has told Tim Carney of the Washington Examiner that if it turns out well in Colorado, he's willing to examine it if he were elected governor in Virginia. So he's not even, you know, adamantly opposed to drug legalization on that issue. But Ken Cuccinelli has 7 children. He drives a minivan, lives in Northern Virginia. He's obviously very deeply Catholic. And so he comes across, in terms of his lifestyle, perhaps a little more socially conservative than some might think. And the other thing, you know, one of the more interesting discussions in that Carney piece is whether libertarianism really has become more of a lifestyle issue than a policy-based issue. One of the reasons I've never quite been as attracted to libertarianism as the good folks at Reason or perhaps George Will is that marijuana legalization has never been a big issue for me one way or the other. They always seem very focused on that issue, and I have a hard time believing that's the most preeminent problem facing the country at this point. Finally, one last aspect I want to mention here, Greg, and I'm very curious about your take on this. I was having a Twitter exchange with a delightful woman on Twitter named Biased Girl, and we kind of concluded that libertarianism is sort of like hipsterism for social liberals, meaning that they don't completely understand what it means, but they know it sounds cool. So they start saying that they're libertarian when they don't really mean it because they wouldn't actually like to get rid of all the government programs that go with that. Worth noting, for example, Sarvis supports expanding Medicaid, which is one of the driving points of Obamacare. I don't really think you could be pro-Obamacare and libertarian at the same time. This is a giant expansion of government. So quite a few times in conversations with libertarian people who insist they're libertarian, and they go down the line all the social liberal perspectives, which is kind of consistent with most traditional definitions of libertarianism. And then you keep waiting for them to find a government program that they want to repeal, do away with, cut, eliminate. And they never seem to get to that part. And so after a while, you just feel like shouting at people, you don't really know what libertarian means. It just sounds good to you, you know. And so I kind of have this feeling that basically libertarian is a way to be either a social liberal who just wants to sound cooler than they are, or B, a kind of generic social liberal who just doesn't like paying taxes. And I kind of think that's what I think a certain portion of self-proclaimed libertarians are. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of libertarians out there who will write in and say, Jim, I'm not like that at all. Okay, I don't mean you personally. But I think they're safe to say that libertarianism has become this kind of catch-all term that's very loose in its definition. And then I think there are a lot of folks who are really better defined as liberals with the occasional issue disagreement with the Democratic Party than fully functioning libertarians who really believe in maximizing liberty in all aspects and shrinking government and all that stuff.
My question to people who are down on Cuccinelli is, consider the alternative, because Sarvis isn't going to win. And it's one thing to think about a third candidate when the Republican nominee is somebody who's so squishy on so many different issues, you really wonder whether the R next to his name is appropriate. That's not the issue with Ken Cuccinelli. Ken Cuccinelli is down the line conservative on just about everything. He hits the three legs of the stool very, very well. And not, there's not a ton of national security issues related to the governorship, but economic, socially conservative, he's right there where you want him to be. Anyway, on to Martini number three quickly. And Jim, this is going to shock you. President Obama was not aware of a major controversy slash scandal prior to it becoming headline news. That, of course, happened during the IRS targeting of Tea Party organizations. But the latest is that the U.S. was actually doing surveillance on leaders of countries we like Angela Merkel of Germany and others along the way. Brazil's president is all upset about this now. And the U.S. response is, well, we had no idea.
It'd be interesting to see kind of what the general consensus on the right is about these latest revelations about the NSA. I think it's good reason to have very serious concerns about how the NSA is being used domestically and the kind of eavesdropping domestic surveillance on Americans. My attitude has always been, for foreigners, do whatever the heck you want. Spy, intrude, eavesdrop, do whatever the heck you got to do, because they're foreigners, and the Constitution doesn't say a darn thing about them. So certainly no constitutional objection to what the NSA is doing to the Germans. Now, I'm not surprised that Angela Merkel is offended by this. It probably didn't help that when she called Obama, his response was, Angela, I know exactly what you're going to say, because I was already listening to your other calls complaining about this. Angela, now she's just shouting in German. I can't tell what she's saying here. Ultimately, I don't think there's anything that surprising about this. I don't think there's anything that wrong about this. You know, leaders of countries spy on other leaders of other countries, even allies.
Yep.
One of the reasons you do – but this is not because we think the Germans are going to turn into our enemies or villains anytime soon. This way, we know what they know, and we don't have to rely on their goodwill of sharing intelligence and sharing what, you know, their information on these sorts of things. And this may offend them. They may not like that. They may feel like this is acting like we don't trust them, but ultimately – when it comes to our security, we cannot assume that they will share everything that they do. Also, if we have this technology. By the way, Angela Merkel and everybody else is upset about this. Look, Greg, do you think the Chinese are squeamish about spying on other countries?
Not at all. I'm not even sure the Germans are squeamish about doing it. They just probably don't do it as well as we do.
This is not really a moral objection. This is envy, all right, that we're really good at doing this. And, you know, the Russians, I'm sure, are doing it. I'm sure all kinds of countries, you know, are looking at these sorts of things. The only question is whether they have the capability of listening to stuff like Merkel's cell phone and stuff like that. So what is the lesson here? If we really believe that the U.S. isn't doing anything wrong, then why is the hubbub here? But the lesson here is don't run as Hopi Changey Kumbaya guy around Europe. Right? I mean, don't pretend to be something that you're not. And that's what really, you know, the real problem here is that Obama ran, and he remember his big speech out in Berlin and all that stuff, that he was the polar opposite of George W. Bush, and that he would, you know, all these differences that we basically he kind of let people believe that anything the U.S. does that bothers them would stop happening. And of course, that could never happen without us, you know, completely basically shutting down all of our national security state. As a result of that, Obama is now in the problem of not living up to what he, you know, promised. Now, the next Republican who runs for president should say, look, I believe in, you know, the U.S. government, in order to protect its people, needs to get all the information it possibly can from overseas sources, whatever it takes. And say, that's my policy. And if you like it, great. If you don't like it, don't vote for me.
And if you think the libertarians didn't like you after the second martini, after the third martini.
Well, again, foreigners, you know, Americans. I don't want you spying on Americans.
Exactly.
Well, this will be a problem is the next time I travel overseas or anything. Or next time I end up getting, you know, we end up going overseas, I'll probably have a lot of folks seeing me as the nasty face of the NSA. But, you know, really, it's not that much worse than being in Turkey during the Bush years. So.
On that note, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.